So, this morning we discussed how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is truly Krishna himself, and how it is only Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who can give us that unique gift that no other incarnation can give. We discussed Paritranaya Sadhanam Vinasya Saduskritam Dharma Samsarpanatya Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. That Krishna appears again and again in this material world to establish the principles of religion and to annihilate the demons. And we see many examples. Even Krishna himself is also doing the same, because Krishna is killing demons. Krishna is speaking the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So in this way, we see that even Krishna takes up the same work as any other incarnation of the Lord. But then Krishna also unfolds his unique pastimes. Whereas Lord Ramachandra comes into this world, and Lord Ramachandra is trying to establish the principles of Dharma. So Lord Ramachandra is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is acting like a perfect role model of what a human being could be at its very best. Yeah? Okay, no one is coming up to that level, but that's what he displays. But Krishna is coming for another purpose. Krishna comes to show how the Supreme Lord himself acts in the spiritual world, and he gives us a sample of that. So that is unique. Lord Chaitanya is that very same Krishna, but this time in a very merciful manifestation. Now, the life and activities and teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are described in various biographies, and of course the principal one is the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which Srila Prabhupada translated and gave us. And many of us have not read it, or not read much of it, a little bit, right? Then there are many other biographies that also are completely bona fide and that describe also the life and qualities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What I was thinking of doing is to dip a little bit into the various biographies. And as we are dipping and tasting, it will be short and just to the point. Because if I would do an extensive, systematic presentation of all these biographies, we would be here for much longer than this retreat. We should just move here and just make that our day-to-day activity and forget the rest. We see that Srivas Thakur did exactly that. He was spending his entire days and nights with hearing and chanting about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it is described that one day Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Srivas, he said, Srivas, you are all day long arranging for different pujas and discussions of scriptures and so on, and at night there is kirtan in your house all the time. Srivas, I have one question. Srivas, don't you have to work? Don't you ever have to go to work? And Srivas said, My Lord, I promise you that I shall not work. Okay. And subsequently, then he said, My Lord, if you don't maintain us, then me and my family, we will simply fast. Then the second day, if you still don't maintain us, my Lord, me and my family will simply fast. And on the third day, my Lord, if you will not maintain me and my family, then we will all jump in the river and drown ourselves. Oh, no, Srivas, no, don't worry, Srivas. You will never have to work. And he got that benediction. And there will never be a shortage of anything in your life. Thus, Srivas attained that state, where an authorized state of spending all his time just glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anyway, for us, I guess it's a dream. but it's impressive, though, that Srivas attained this. Meanwhile, let us hear a little bit about Lord Chaitanya. Let us glorify the boundlessly merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Prince of Raja, to taste the intoxicating sweet waves of the nectar of transcendental love for Krishna, as well as to give that nectar to others. He has now appeared in the transcendental abode of Navadvipa as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One who is untouched by any piety, who is completely absorbed in irreligion, or has never received the merciful glance of the devotees, or been to any holy place sanctified by them, will still ecstatically dance, loudly sing, and even roll about on the ground when he becomes intoxicated by tasting the nectar of the transcendental mellows of pure love of God given by Lord Chaitanya. Let me therefore glorify that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Maybe the translator wants to borrow my phone, and then you can have the same text in front of you. Would that help? No?
Translate this text.
Easy. Ich schaff das. Doch. Lass uns der unbegrenzt gnadlose allerhöchste Persönlichkeit Gottes, der Prinz von Raja, verherrlichen. So fängt's an. Take a deep breath. I will not go too far. Come on. So, now you are where I am. So we read the second verse, which is very nice. It says, it describes how even those who never had any piety, always irreligious, who never got the merciful glance of the devotees, in no way they had anything to do with spiritual mercy. And still, they will become intoxicated by tasting the nectar of transcendental mellows of pure love of God. So it's not just for a few people. The whole world will become touched by this. The whole world will be transformed by this. It's not that there will be one little place on the Bergstrasse and that it's mainly empty except on Sunday. And that, you know, and that is the future. Not at all. Not at all. It's just the beginning. The beginning of the influence of Lord Chaitanya. In so many ways, Lord Chaitanya is already changing the world. Not so long ago, there was an article in an Irish newspaper written by a journalist who said that is it maybe that the influence of Hare Krishna is spreading everywhere, all over? Is it maybe not that people are wearing robes and all these things, nor that people are officially converting or anything like that, But little by little, the knowledge is filtering into society. He was saying, now everyone is meditating, everyone is doing yoga, everyone is taking the substance. The substance is gradually becoming mainstream. And it's a long article, but the article sort of ends. Is there something these Hare Krishnas know? A secret that nobody knows? And will it be that in the end, with all these activities such as yoga and so on, that in the end we will be all walking around in saffron robes? It was a nice article. I think he had a vision, you know, a vision that it was more than just an article. That journalist had a vision which even goes beyond our vision. He saw better than we do how the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is spreading, because we sometimes think we belong to an isolated, small group, and that, yeah, we're all alone, and we look just for devotees to do all the deity worship in the temple, or something like that. Sometimes we feel like that, and we feel that it's almost impossible, an impossible task to change the world. But that's not the fact if we listen to this book, because here in the Chaitanya Chandramrita from Prabodhananda Saraswati, we see that the world is changing. It is rapidly changing. Who is Prabodhananda Saraswati? When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu traveled after taking sannyas through South India, he came to Sri Rangam. Sri Rangam is a very famous place in South India. It is the headquarters of the Sri Sampradaya. And in Sri Rangam, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's arrival coincided with the rainy season. And traditionally, sadhus during the rainy season would stay in one place. The rest of the time, those in the renounced order would move around, but for 4 years, four months of the rainy season, they would remain in one place. I mean, they had a nice life compared to the modern day sannyasis. I've often thought about that. Would be nice to have a rainy season and stay 4 months in one place. It would be quite civilized, actually. Yeah, some introspection and all that, you know. The traditional way of sannyas, of sometimes residing in a forest and then coming out to preach, is very appealing. It seemed to be a life very closely connected to God, and an internal life, a life where one can be focused on Krishna. And then, after duly being alone with the Lord, then come out and preach. We have to steal a few hours in the early morning before the world gets up, and that's our chance, right? To be alone with God, alone with the Lord. That happens at night when others are sleeping. But if we also sleep, then when can we ever be alone with the Lord? It's difficult, very hard. And yet, being alone with the Lord is not a luxury. It is not a luxury at all. It is essential. It is essential that we take that time to just be alone. Alone and turn to Krishna. And leave all the clutter of all other things behind. Right? There is no phone. There are no people. No children. The little darlings are asleep. Right? There is nobody. That time of the day, that is such an amazing time. And one rises early and chants early. One reads and just really is fresh. The brain is not tired. One is really connecting and realizing something there. just as Srila Prabhupada would write his purports in the hours of the night and refer to it as his moments of ecstasy.
So this point
of being alone with Krishna is a first point I want to draw from here, and I'll come back to it. But first, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in South India, there in Sri Rangam, he met various personalities. He met Venkatabhata, a great scholar in the Sri Sampradaya, and he met his son Gopal Bhatta, who later became Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Gopal Bhatta's uncle was Prabodhananda Saraswati, a sannyasi at the time, and very learned and very devoted. And it is that that Prabodhananda Saraswati who wrote this particular work, the Chaitanya Chandramrita, or the Nectar Amrita of Chaitanya Chandra, or of Lord Chaitanya, the rising moon, or like this. Text number 3. Not attainable by the faithful performance. Are you still okay with that phone, or should I tell you my password also? Okay. Every once in a while, put your thumb on there, otherwise it will go shut down. And I will privately tell you, but not over the microphone. Not attainable by the faithful performance of pious deeds, not understood by those engaged in austerity, meditation and yoga, not guessed by those absorbed in detachment, renunciation or prayers, and unknown even to the devotees full of love for Lord Govinda, the secret of pure devotional service has been revealed by the holy name during Lord Chaitanya's advent. Let me glorify that Lord Chaitanya. So carrying on with our being alone with Krishna, we can be a member of a group. Being in a group is nourishing. The power of conforming is very great. There are various experiments done by psychologists about people conforming to others. One is, there's a man, he's in an elevator, and he comes down, and one floor down, three other people get into the elevator. The man who's in the elevator is facing the front, and the door opens, the people come in. But the three people that come in, they are facing the back wall. So they stand backwards. And this man, who is alone, sees three people looking in the other direction. So he's sort of like looking over his shoulder. There's a camera hidden in the elevator. Looking around, he's looking behind him. And then he looks on his watch, and as he sort of lifts his arm, he turns a little bit. And he is already half turned. Yeah? Then he puts the watch down, and then he turns completely. And he has conformed to the others completely. He does everything everyone else does. And they do another thing. There's a man who wears a hat, and he comes in the elevator. And again, three others, and they also wear hats. So they all wear, three other guys with hats come in. So they all have hats now. Then at one point, the three men take off their hats. And then after a little while, he also takes off his hat. And it's absolutely interesting, these things. Yeah? There's another experiment, an experiment of a waiting room, in a doctor's waiting room. And people are sitting on chairs, as it is in a waiting room, and suddenly there's a beep. And one upon the beep, one man stands up. He suddenly stands up.
And then all people look, you know. And then after about 2 minutes, another beep. And again he stands up. And then after a little while, on the third beep, there's another person who stands up with him. And gradually, the whole waiting room stands up upon the beeps. And after a little while, the original person leaves. Right? But people still keep on standing up on the beeps. So nobody knows anymore why they're standing up. They're just doing it because other people are doing it. So it's a very interesting type of experiments. These experiments of conforming may also be there in a spiritual movement.
Yeah. We may also
conform to the environment we are in, and we speak about the power of devotee association and how that association is essential to spiritual life and how it is stimulating. But yet, it's not the all in all. It's not enough. It is not that one is just carried by that association alone. Srila Prabhupada is also giving the example of how we are, how everyone is flying his own plane. And it says, when the plane is on the ground, there are so many people doing things with it. Some are putting fuel, some are putting goods, some are checking the wheels, and whatever they do with planes on the ground. But once the plane is in the air, then it's on its own. So that is a fact. So we'll look at this angle, at this text, and at this point, we keep in mind that in the ultimate sense, we are alone with Krishna, and that we have to, we should not forget to make that connection with Krishna, that we cannot just be carried by a program, that we cannot just be carried by a community. Although community is extremely powerful, still everyone on his own has to turn towards Krishna and actually approach Krishna and beg before Krishna. Meanwhile, we're exploring the extraordinary mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I'll take another verse of the Chaitanya Charanamrita. I go to text number 5. For those who have attained the merciful sight-long glance of Lord Chaitanya, impersonal liberation becomes as palatable as going to hell. The heavenly cities of the demigods become as real as flowers imagined to float in the sky. The poisonous fangs of the untamable black snakes of the senses become broken. The whole world becomes full of joy, and Brahma, Indra, and all the great demigods become like tiny insects. Let us glorify that Lord Chaitanya. Once we take up devotional service, as has been revealed by Lord Chaitanya, then we are no longer engaged in religious activity for some material benediction. So many pray, oh Lord, save me from danger, oh Lord, let there be no disease, oh Lord, let us be rich, oh Lord, please bless our life, let everything go wonderful. But the followers of Lord Chaitanya, they lose interest in all these things, and they carry only about pure devotional service. They care only about serving Krishna and nothing else. That is our interest. Text number 6. When Lord Chaitanya's devotees, who are worshipped even by the demigods, drink the wonderfully sweet nectar of the bliss of pure love of God that flows from the lotus flower of Lord Chaitanya's feet, they become completely intoxicated. In that condition, they laugh at Lord Brahma and the other demigods, condemn the impersonalist yogis, and do not consider the great devotees of Lord Vishnu, who do not worship Lord Chaitanya, to be very important. Let us glorify that Lord Chaitanya. And then the final verse I referred to this morning. What benefit did the world attain when Lord Ram, Lord Nisringa, and many other incarnations of Godhead killed so many Rakshasa and Daitya demons? How important is it that Lord Kapila and other incarnations revealed the path of Sankhya and Yoga? How glorious is it that Lord Brahma and other Guna avatars create, maintain, and destroy the material universes? How auspicious is it that Lord Varaha lifted the earth from the Garbhadak ocean? We do not consider any of these activities to be very important. The most important thing is that Lord Chaitanya has revealed the great splendor of pure love of Krishna. Let us glorify that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So here we see, yoga is condemned, impersonal liberation is condemned, karmakanda is condemned, and even going beyond that, even being devotees of Lord Vishnu, but who are not worshipping Lord Chaitanya, such devotees cannot enter into the same depth of love of God, nor be aware of that level of quality. At best, the worshippers of Lord Vishnu can develop love of God mixed with Aishwarya, mixed with awe and reverence, appreciating the glory of the Lord's greatness, the unlimited powers of the Lord, the unlimited opulences of the Lord, but they cannot become completely aloof, completely only absorbed in somehow or other pleasing Krishna. Even Uddhava, who was such a close devotee of Krishna. In Dwarka, so Sanatana Goswami describes, there was the royal assembly house which Krishna had brought from the heavenly planets when there was that fight with Indra to take the Parijata tree from the heavenly planets down. He also took the royal assembly house of Indra. So he had this royal assembly house, and whoever was in that place was not aging in any way, nor experiencing any symptoms of disease. I would move in. What a place. Yes. So Krishna there would perform, would gather in a daily assembly with various devotees, and they would be seated. Krishna would be seated on a throne. Next to him on the right would be his father Vasudev. Then next to Vasudev would be Ugrasena, and because he was actually the ruling king, he would sit a little bit to the front. Then on the other side, on the left side was Satyaki, the military commander, and maybe some others also. So in this, and then there was Uddhava. And Uddhava was the disciple of Brihaspati, who is the spiritual master of the demigods. So Uddhava was extremely learned. And therefore, between Krishna and Uddhava, there would be a secret exchange. They would speak so complicated in Sanskrit and in riddles that no one understood what they meant except the two of them. So in this way, Krishna and Uddhava had a special intimacy. Then at the end of the assembly in this Raja Dharma place, Krishna would return to his private quarters, and all the residents would come. They would all join. They would all follow Krishna to the quarters. Then, after some time, Krishna sort of let it known to his assistants that he might want to be alone. There's an announcement made, and everyone would leave. And it was asked that everyone should leave. So everyone left, except Uddhava, because he didn't think that it was about him. He wasn't everyone. So when everyone was meant to leave, that didn't mean Uddhava had to leave. It just meant everyone has to leave, not Uddhava, because he was very close and very intimate. And then Uddhava would stay, and he would still massage the feet of Krishna and all these things. But then, Then Krishna later sent Uddhava to Vrindavan. And when Uddhava came to Vrindavan and he saw how Yasoda was crying in separation from Krishna, there were just tears flowing from her eyes. Milk was flowing from her breasts as she was thinking of Krishna. And then Uddhava thought, she's going to turn into a river. We have the Yamuna Devi is a river personified, except like one of these days we're going to have a Yasoda river, because she's going to become a river. She's just becoming liquid. So extraordinary was the love of God of Yasoda that it was just beyond what Uddhava could imagine. And although Uddhava had been sent with a message to the gopis and to the residents of Vrindavan to relieve their feelings of separation, maybe the more important purpose was that Uddhava was there to learn about the pure, unalloyed love of Golok. So this is why Prabodhananda speaks so bold, saying that what's the point of Lord Ramachandra, Lord Nrisinga, and so many Rakshas and Daityas killed, Lord Kapila and Sankhya, the Guna avatars, Lord Brahma, who are creating, maintaining, destroying the material universe, Lord Vara, lifting the earth from the Garbhadak ocean. All these activities do not seem very important. So that is truly quality. Now it's no longer about being a Vaishnava. Now it's no longer about worshipping Vishnu. When we say we are Vaishnavas, we have a very generous definition. Vaishnavas means everyone who is somehow or other worshipping Vishnu is included. But here, oh no, we are not generous any longer. Here we are just simply approaching Lord Chaitanya with intense focus. Very much appreciating the unique gift of love of God that he has revealed. Now, this is truly the purpose of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. Whenever we see that all the biographies of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu carry that as the principal theme, to gradually reveal love of God. When we look at the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that's what's happening. Gradually, love of God is being revealed. First, it's sort of hidden in Nimai's youth. Then Nimai takes sannyas and it bursts forth from his heart. He becomes ecstatic, he dances, he goes around South India. People get swept up, whole villages become ecstatic, and the ecstatic people go to the village and the whole village becomes ecstatic. It's like a tidal wave of ecstasy. And it continues like that. And by the time it comes to South India, to Sri Rangam, there's a discussion with Venkatabhata. And the distinction is established between Lakshmi and between Radharani, between Vrindavan and between Vaikuntha. And that Lakshmi, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, but my dear Venkatabhata, I have heard that Lakshmi Devi is fully dedicated to the lotus feet of Lord Narayana. Yes. Then, how is it that Lakshmi Devi was also attracted to Krishna? There is no difference between Krishna and Narayana, says Venkatabhata. Says, then, why is it that when Lakshmi Devi performed austerities to enter into the pastimes of Krishna, that she could not enter if there is no difference between the two? Then Venkatabhata said, the ways of the Lord are achincha, inconceivable. That's the ultimate. If you don't know what to say anymore, you can always pull that argument. But it was very clear that Lakshmi Devi is approaching the Lord with all his opulence. With all his opulence, his majesty, the all-pervading, all-powerful, all-knowing Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? Not Krishna, the cowherd boy. So with all that concept, she could not enter into the intimate relationship of treating Krishna like an ordinary cowherd boy. Look at that story where Nanda Maharaj had taken his bath on the Dwadasi in the Yamuna River too early. Too early. What to do? And how Nanda Maharaj at that time got arrested by the servants of Varuna, brought before Varuna. And Varuna is very opulent because the ocean is filled with jewels. So there he sits on his jewel throne and opulent ornaments everywhere. I mean, you couldn't hire an actor to act out the part of Varuna convincingly. It was clearly the real Varuna. I mean, all the opulence was there. So Nanda Maharaj is seeing Varuna and saying, "This is incredible. I never believed that this could possibly happen to me in this lifetime, that I would see Varuna face to face." He is stunned. Meanwhile, above the Yamuna, alarm, 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 Nanda has disappeared in the waters. Nanda Maharaj is drowning. Krishna jumps in the water, ready, moments later, appears there in front of Varuna, and Varuna falls off his throne like a stick on the ground. And when he gets up, he says, "Finally, this life of so many is successful. Finally, now I'm getting the darshan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead." And Nanda Maharaj is standing there, Varuna, saying that Krishna, my son, Supreme Personality of Godhead? I mean, then Krishna says, Varuna wants to offer more prayers, and Krishna says, "Sorry, got no time, got to go now, got people up there in total anxiety. Come on, Nanda Maharaj, we're getting out of here." Grabs him by the arm, and moments later they both emerge from the water. And next, you know, Nanda Maharaj tells the whole thing, and then Varuna is saying, "Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead, no. Krishna, are you God all this time? You fooled us. Well, you really did. Now, well, now we know. Okay, you must show us something." And Krishna said, "What do you want?" Someone said, "Maybe you can show us the Brahma Jyoti." Krishna said, "Nah, that's so boring. I'll show you Goloka." And Krishna showed Goloka, and it looked exactly the same as their own village. There was only one different. There were these effulgent personalities, the Vedas personified. So the residents of Vrindavan sort of asked, "Who are they? Oh, Vedas personified. Oh, I see." That was the proof that they were seeing something else than their own village. But for the rest, it looked exactly like their village, and they were very satisfied with that. Then, after a little while, when anybody would say, "Hey, have you heard?" No, "Have you heard? Have you heard? Krishna is the Supreme Lord." After a little while, everyone, as soon as you say, "Have you?" Yeah, I have heard. Old hat. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So after a little while, nobody spoke about it anymore because everybody knew, and they all forgot. So that's how the residents of Vrindavan dealt with this understanding, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, when they found out. Didn't make any difference. No, he was still a boy from their village. But Lakshmi Devi could never enter into that mood. She was always dedicated to serving the feet of the unlimited, great, Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the ultimate controller, who is the Lord and Master of all that he surveys, who is the origin of all origins. And that majesty of the Lord she could not forget. And ever she was distant, I could never get that same intimacy of the resonance of Vrindavan. But Lord Chaitanya gives us that more intimate. I'll jump to text number 10 in the second chapter. Auspicious introduction in the form of offering obeisances. Namaskar Rupa Mangala Charanam. I'll go to the middle, text 10. Moving his hands and feet, raising the two golden rods of his arms, trembling as he dances, and loudly calling out, Hari, Hari, in ecstatic bliss, Lord Chaitanya Chandra vanquishes the inauspiciousness of this world. To that Lord Chaitanya Chandra, whose eyes are like two large lotus flowers, who is immersed in tasting the sweet nectar of pure love of Krishna, and who is the crest jewel of all incarnations, I offer my respectful obeisances. Now, as a devotee, Bhakta Rupa. But what kind of devotee? A devotee that had never seen before. No one had ever seen such a devotee. When Nimai first came back from Gaya, where he had met his spiritual master, he was transformed. Before, he was a big scholar. But when he came back, he had become a devotee. And everyone said, oh, he's a devotee. And Nimai was in a mood of serving the Vaishnavas. And some, out of mercy, let him help them and carry something for them, Bhakta Nimai. In this way, initially, they thought, give him some mercy. But very soon, they began to see he was showing ecstatic symptoms. It said that in the morning, the devotees would assemble in the garden of Srivas, where there was a tree which said was transcendental. That tree was producing wonderful flowers in any season. And therefore, the devotees would daily go there to collect flowers for their puja. So that was the place where the Vaishnavas would meet in the morning. And that's where the latest news would reach. And some said, have you heard? Have you heard? Nimai has become an amazing devotee. He's back from Gaya. And now he has become not just a devotee, but completely ecstatic. He was experiencing such feelings of ecstasy in the house of Suklambha Brahmachari. The hairs on his body stood on end. He fell unconscious on the ground. Everyone was amazed. Not only was now Nimai Pandit a devotee, but now he was immediately the most advanced devotee, showing symptoms of love of God, which are very rarely attained by any Vaishnava. In this way, moving his hand and feet and raising the two golden rods of his arm, trembling as he dances and loudly calling out Hari Hari in ecstatic bliss. In this way, O Lord Chaitanya Chandra, O Lord, whose form is full of blissful pastimes, O Lord, whose complexion is splendid as gold, O Lord, who gives in charity the nectar of pure love for Krishna, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Yes, we must offer our respectful obeisances. Once I had a dream, and in my dream I offered really very devotional obeisances to my spiritual master. Then, as he lifted me up, he really appreciated. And he said, oh, your prayers are so wonderful. And I said, well, it's not always like that. And then he said, why not? Paying obeisances is not gymnastics. It's not about, and bend your back and put your nose on the ground. And, you know, and that we're working the spine, right? Or the knees, or all these things. We are bowing down. We are bowing down. We're not just bowing down our bodies. We're bowing down in consciousness. We're bowing down our will. We are giving up our independence. we are now prostrating ourselves. I am your instrument, your will, as you desire. That is my will. I have no other interest than your interest, my Lord. That is the prayer. See, that you can only do when you are alone. When you alone go before the Lord and really pay obeisances. Not just in and out a temple, nose on the ground and bounce back up without even thinking. Automatic pilot. No. Now conscious, now deep, now prayerful, now in a mood of giving ourselves and at the same time being aware of the inability we have to surrender. I'm bowing before you, but how sincere am I? How much am I really giving myself? Oh my Lord, somehow or other, I'm turning to worship you here, turning to you to worship you, and I need you to give me the power to worship you. Because on my own, I cannot. Just like we scoop up water from the Ganga and offer to the Ganga. We cannot worship the Lord without the Lord helping us and giving us the power to worship Him. Sanatan Goswami, who is described as very wise, received all transcendental instructions from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And after he had received instructions of the entire philosophy of Krishna consciousness, he asked for one benediction. And the benediction was, my Lord, please let all these instructions be manifest in me. See, this is the spirit. This is the spirit. I read text 12. To Lord Hari, his eyes now like millions of rain clouds, shedding torrents of tears, the opulence of pure love of Krishna, making him laugh at millions of Vaikuntha worlds, his charming handsomeness like millions of nectar oceans, and his role now that of a sannyasi, I offer my respectful obeisances. So this is it. We're looking at Lord Chaitanya. We're not just looking at... He's our example. We're looking at what bhakti really is about. It is not some sort of that love of God is a warm feeling in the chest. It is not that love of God is something that can be controlled. It is said initially it exists as dumita in the smoking stage. Not smoking stage, but, you know, smoking stage, right? It's a metaphor of like a smoldering fire. But eventually, it comes to jwala, to a blazing fire, and to a, finally, it comes to sudipta, an intensely blazing fire. Completely out of control. Love of God, just like that. Completely out of control. That is really what Krishna consciousness is. We may not have it, but we can begin to desire it. We can begin to contemplate what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is trying to give us, what we're actually part of. It's not that we are part of the movement for chanting 16 rounds. You know, and we get 16 on our kurtas or clothes, all emblem 16. Are you part of the 16 club? 16 club, 16 rounds. That's not what we are. Not at all. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made a very interesting statement, which means a lot to me. He says, we are initiated in the mantra Kirtaniya Sadahari. And I thought, that's like, whoa. You know, I mean, if I would have asked you, in what mantra are you initiated? Some would have said the Hare Krishna mantra, and the Maha mantra. But who would have said Kirtaniya Sadahari? Who would have said? Initiated in the mantra Kirtanya Sadari. So yeah, it means that when I spoke as a theme, which I'm bringing back again and again, alone with Krishna, I'm speaking about that, about a personal effort to make a connection, not just being carried by association. Oh yes, we need that association. Not just being carried by an institution which has standards. Are you adhering to the standards? Yes, must be. Not just standards. We see amongst the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu amazing personalities. I always love to go to Jaipur, because in Jaipur, in these temples, we find the Radha Govinda temple and we find the Radha Gopinath temple. And in these temples, these are the deities of our Goswamis that were taken from Vrindavan and taken to Jaipur because safe from the Muslim invasion. And the culture of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement continued to live in these temples. We see in the Radha Govinda temple on the side a big painting of Gornitai on the right side of the altar. And the people are in the mood of giving. They all want to give. If they buy Mahaprasadam, they don't just hide it, they eat it somewhere in a hidden corner. No, they stand and they distribute. And when the pujaris throw the water, it's not three drops in your neck. Right? There are two pujaris, and one is carrying a big pot of water, and the other has a conch, and he throws water, you get drenched. Bring an umbrella, drenched. And then as they throw the water, and the people, they all open their mouths to catch that water. I mean, what a temple. I love it. It's amazing. It's wonderful. Yeah, that spirit. And you come to the Radha Gopinath temple, and there on the side there is a window, and in that window there is the Tulsi jacket and Tulsi hat of Madhu Pandit. That's also so far out. I have read that he was wearing that while chanting japa, and thinking, wow, he was not just... nowadays, we might describe him as a bit eccentric. Different, wearing a Tulsi jacket and a hat and doing japa. So these were real personalities. So many amazing stories we hear. Srinivas Acharya and associates every night on Ekadasi stayed up all night to chant the holy name of the Lord. But because sleep may come, they took their sikas and tied them with strings to the roof. And they're chanting like that. What an amazing tradition we are part of. A tradition of eagerness, not just a tradition of belonging to a society or being part a member of a group, but really a tradition of people who wanted to go all the way. And that is really the message of this Chaitanya Chandramrita. Chapter 4, Sri Chaitanya Bhakti Bhakti Mahima, Glorification of Lord Chaitanya's Devotees. The splendid path of pure devotional service, which bewildered the great sages in the past with material intelligence, has no power to enter, which Sukadev Goswami was not able to understand, and which merciful Lord Krishna never revealed to his closest friend, is the place where the dear devotees of Lord Chaitanya happily enjoy pastimes. So that's again amazing. I mean, Sukadev Goswami couldn't enter, but how is that? He is the speaker of the Bhagavatam. So how can there be anywhere that Sukadeva Goswami cannot enter when the Bhagavatam is spoken by him? But the Bhagavatam is our book. Everything is there. Everything is contained within the Bhagavatam. So how can there be anything that Sukadeva Goswami didn't know? If the Bhagavatam is complete, is Prabodhananda Saraswati saying that the Bhagavatam is incomplete? No. 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 He said that verbatim, I never memorized the verse, but maybe someone else did, but he said that Vyasadev may or may not know. Sukadev may know, may not know. Lord Shiva may know. And like this, he's describing how various personalities may or may not know. Vyasadev wrote down the Vedic literature, but he may not have known everything he wrote, because he was an instrument of the Lord. The Lord worked through him, not necessarily that he realized everything. Even Sukadev, as an instrument, speaking the Bhagavatam. Sukadev is described in his Swarup as a parrot. So he may not have fully entered into the topmost rasas, which Lord Chaitanya reveals. So that could explain this verse where it said, Sukadeva Goswami was not able to understand, and which merciful Lord Krishna never revealed to his closest friend, is the place where the dear devotees of Lord Chaitanya happily enjoy pastimes. So in these verses, we are qualifying the extraordinary mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And we're seeing the goal is being more refined. It's not like just a general goal, like, yes, the goal is, what is the goal? The goal is to go back to Godhead. Or the goal is Prema Pumartha Maham, to attain love of God. But here, that love of God is gradually being qualified. It describes how it comes like tidal waves, torrents of rain. Strong words are used to explain strong experiences. Of course, I don't have so much time because I'm supposed to end at 6, and that's 12 minutes away. Oh dear. What shall I do now? I'm in Switzerland. Time is very important in Switzerland because they sell watches on every street corner. Time must, and you hear these bells ringing all the time, clock towers everywhere. Time is everything in Switzerland. It's no doubt about it. So, but in the world of Lord Chaitanya, time is gone. Time is no longer on their mind. It is simply waves of ecstasy and chanting. I wish I could read more verses, because there are wonderful verses. I'll mention one where previously various incarnations of the Lord appeared to annihilate so many demons. And where previously Lord Krishna appeared to relieve the burden of the earth and remove many, many military phalanxes from the earth. Now that same Lord is coming to relieve the burden of the earth by dancing on her. So that's interesting. I think it's a nice last statement. Lord Chaitanya is doing the same mission as Krishna, relieving the burden of the earth, but this time not by killing the military phalanxes, but instead dancing on her. So I think that's kind of a beautiful statement. In conclusion, in my meditation, which was the point that I pinned down for you, how ultimately we see that here is Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur alone with his Lord, alone approaching the Lord, glorifying the Lord, looking at that mission, prostrating himself before the Lord, glorifying the devotees. Then there's a chapter criticizing the non-devotees, and he gets into it. I mean, he doesn't. He calls them no better than animals and extremely strong terms. Right? And then he does a very modern thing, a chapter of self-criticism. Right? He's also kind of, it starts with, alas, 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 you know, the whole world got the mercy of the Lord, and I missed out. Which is the spirit of the devotee who approaches the Lord not in a spirit from, well, I've become quite advanced now, I've been chanting for 3 years. Well, now, coming before the Lord in this spirit of, I am just somehow or other, it didn't work for me. It worked for everyone else. But with me, alas, it didn't work. My Lord, now all I can do is turn to you and beg you, right? I come empty-handed. I have nothing. So that spirit, again, coming alone before the Lord, empty-handed, realizing I have nothing to offer you that is not already yours. I have no qualification, no glories. And in that way, I can only approach you and beg you, please, please have mercy on me. And although I'm not deserving, please give it to me anyway, somehow or other, please. That spirit is ultimately our entrance. That's the entrance point. And we see that theme of humility throughout the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, and how that humility purchases the Lord, his mercy. And humility and honesty are close. They're close. Because when you get honest, thoroughly honest, well, then you could start an exercise. Am I perfect? Well, maybe almost, but maybe not completely. Well, that's the beginning of humility. If I'm not completely perfect, then could I have some faults? Possibly. Yeah, I guess so. If I would have some faults, which ones? Then take a pen and paper and write them down. 3 hours later, it's like hand in a cramp and so on. Will it ever end? Will it ever end, this list of faults? So eventually we can appreciate, when we become honest, that humility is the only position we can take. That is all that is reserved for us. The humble position is the only one for the non-qualified. A position without pretense means automatically a humble position. And that is the position from where we can go before the Lord and turn to him without distraction. Then we hope for his causeless mercy. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Guru told us now what Lord Chaitanya brought us. When we worship Tulsi Devi in the morning, we sing or we pray, Vrindayata Rasi Devi Akhya Kesavati Vishnu Bhakti Paradevi Satya Chanamunam. Why we don't sing Krishna Bhakti?
Some devotees do sing Krishna Bhakti actually, but the mantra is a Puranic mantra, which is written there as Vishnu Bhakti.
Before
Lord Chaitanya, it's an older mantra, but we are not allowed to change the scripture because there's also an injunction when Sarvabhaumata Acharya also tried to change a verse after he had become a devotee. Lord Chaitanya chastised him and said, can I change the verses? No, we cannot change it. It's just that we don't understand the deeper purport. Never we think it would be better if it was Krishna Bhakti. But Vishnu, there is no difference. Whether we approach Lord Vishnu or whether we approach Lord Krishna, ultimately another manifestation of the Supreme Lord. So, it doesn't matter so much. Lord Chaitanya, as is being worshipped here by Prabodhananda Saraswati, has such eagerness towards focusing on Lord Chaitanya. We can see even Lord Ramachandra cannot satisfy him, even other incarnations cannot satisfy him, only not even the worship of Krishna without the worship of Chaitanya can satisfy him. So we are with him. We also worship both Lord Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. So in our worship, even if we say the mantra Vishnu Bhakti, internally, our focus is still Krishna, not Vishnu. But we shouldn't change the mantra out of respect for the Vedic literature. Now, we have a Sanskrit scholar who will tell us something, Adi Purush.
Father Devushan says in his commentary that Vishnu means one who enters with each two copies at the Rasa Lila dance.
Wow.
The one who is Vishnu. So you have another meaning for the same name.
See. Father Devushan. See? He has just expanded the meaning for you. Vishnu. One who enters between each two gopas, Paradev Vichabhusan. Which commentary?
Sahasranam.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. The Adi Purush Prabhu is a great scholar. He is. Any other? Maharaj? Such a smile. Okay. I mean, I would even end 2 minutes early. That's against tradition. But anyway, I'd like to reiterate my principal point, and that we ourselves, we cannot just remain complacent as a member in a movement, but we have to make a personal endeavor to do what we can to offer our entire existence to Krishna, our activities, our natures, purify our natures to a point that it would satisfy the Lord. And that is required. Irregardless of ashram, you cannot say, well, that's for sannyasis. No, that's for everyone, for every single individual. So that Chaitanya Chandramrita is very much emphasizing. So, okay.
I just come to think of a question, if it is because we have to stay in tradition, that means overtime. I was sort of thinking when you said we are a tradition of eagerness. And you gave examples of both of Mahavishnu dressing in the Tulsi dress and the devotees staying up all night in order to facilitate this tying the seekers. And so, I mean, if we know that verse is the Lord Yang
Tatralu, jo, aby mu udělali
yeah, jako. Yeah, I was thinking, I was today, I sometimes get questions from devotees who work, and you can say, with all this heavy work and commuting between the working place, it's so difficult for me to complete 16 offenseless rounds without any you know, quality rounds. And I think we can understand what they say. Then I come home, I have children to take care of. What do you think about 16 rounds in modern times? And I always say they must be done. Modern times, yeah. Old times.
Yeah.
But I wonder, how can we lead our devotees who face such realities,
yeah,
type of restrictions, into, you know, not letting the fire of eagerness go down? Because I think if we are really eager,
yeah,
it's no problem to chant,
yeah, yeah,
64 rounds a day. Why is it not so long? But when the eagerness goes down, everything is difficult. So how do you maintain, you know, let us say that
I have
in the eagerness of your audience, maybe there are 10 very eager devotees here,
yeah,
like Niranjana Maharaj, but then already I am not so eager, and others will also be a little less eager. How can I develop such a quality?
Okay, I have different answers. Mm-hmm. I have a sympathetic answer. Have a non-sympathetic answer. Which one would you like first?
Bitterness increases the effort.
Okay. Well, as I looked out of the window earlier on, I noticed people with a backpack on their back, a rucksack, and they're walking on the road. And I was just thinking to myself, yes, you have to work. Yes, you have children and maybe grandchildren as well. Yes, you have all these things. And who taught you to get them? Huh? I mean, you did it to yourself. And then you got yourself entangled over your head, right, in millions of things. And then you say, oh, I have no time to chant Hare Krishna. It's a lot. So that's my whole sympathetic answer. I'm so sorry. But like, you know, you bury yourself in all kinds of distractions and then you cry that you can't chant 16 rounds. No wonder. Or like, as you said, quality rounds. Right? And all right, somehow or other, make the best of it. Deal with it intelligently. Now you'll have to learn lots of extra things. Maybe for part of the non-sympathetic answer is take a course in time management and learn how to break up your day so that you create some time in there so you can chant a few rounds. It's like a lot of people, they just try to chant 16 rounds. They don't manage their 16 rounds. Now, I don't know about you, but I always manage my rounds. Like, I always keep in mind, you know, what I have to do on a day, and a day I'm very busy, I make sure I get up a little earlier, or have a long flight. You know, like, I know from the Niranjan Maharaj, he used to say, the rounds on the plane, I don't count. Yeah? And then he would chant him again after. I don't know if that always works, but if it does, Maharaj obeys us.
I used to do that very early in the morning to make sure I chant before I go to.
Right, right. But if it was late the night before Maharaj, then sometimes I chant them on the
plane.
I see. I sometimes count them on the plane also what to do. But I also tried the Chenin before. Anyway, so the unsympathetic answer was there. Now the sympathetic answer. It's like, yes, yes, I feel for your predicament. I understand. Life is so difficult. The world is not designed for devotional service. We are so unfortunate that we are born in an age where, you know, normal human things like having families and all these kind of things are now so difficult. Now you have to work so hard to maintain. Previously, maybe 4 to 6 hours of work was enough. I saw in Vrindavan, I was temple president, and I was going, it was too much. And Prabhupada had made a rule that the temple president in Vrindavan should sign every check. Gunarneva told me that Prabhupada told him personally. So he trained me like that. So I took it. So I signed every check. It's a lot of checks. I'm signing all these checks. And all the time, knock, knock, knock. Can you sign this check in the shower? Excuse me, can you sign that? No, my hand is wet. We have a towel. So I would escape. I would go to Govardhan and do a parikrama, and people would come and say, "Ah, finally, I've been looking for you the whole week. Can you sign this check?" So I decided I'll go walking in the fields. And as I walked in the fields, one day I came to this field and there was a farmer with a bicycle. And he says in Hindi, which I understand, he says, "Ye hai hamara kheti." This is my crop, he says. And he says, "This is a very good crop. It is very good." He said, "Yes." So the man made an impression on me like a little childish, you know, like a child said, "Look, I can ride a bicycle, this is my crop." So he says, "Yes, I come here every day." So I said, "Oh, really? You come here every day?" Like I would talk to a child, right? He says, "Yes, I come here every day, 1 hour." I said, "Oh, really? You come here every day, 1 hour?" And he says, "Yes." And then I go home. And then I do puja. And then I was thinking, he's not so foolish. This man works 1 hour a day, and the rest of the then he goes home and does puja, and me, I'm signing checks all the day. It's like, so that is why Srila Prabhupada tried to curate communities. Srila Prabhupada had a desire that people would come, devotees would live together in a simple devotee community. And Prabhupada wanted temple presidents who were very mature and spiritually inclined, strong spiritual leaders with human maturity so that they could guide people and harness their trust, trustworthy leaders, so that people could trust and that a community could be built on trust. And if that would have only worked, imagine, we could have lived here all together and just do this every day. No? That could help. Instead of everyone in his own corner and everyone just living all alone and trying to survive and seeing devotees when you're not too tired on Sunday. Yeah, so tired. At least we go for Janmashtami. That kind of life. So, with that, I've tried to sort of answer the question, Maharaj, in a sympathetic way and a non-sympathetic way. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.